Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio's 104-year-old zoo is looking ahead to the next two decades with a new master plan. The upcoming expansions of grounds and natural habitat could cost up to $200 million, and it's expected to reach into other parts of Brackenridge Park. So what's next for the San Antonio Zoo, and what are the roles that zoos are going to be playing in this changing world? And what kind of experiences have you had at this zoo and other zoos? What would you like to see happening at the San Antonio Zoo in the decades to come? We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Be part of our conversation, please. 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Our guest star, we got Tim Morrow with us. He's the CEO of the San Antonio Zoo. And Julie Gross, she is the Vice President of Development at the zoo as well. And welcome to The Source, both of you. It's great to have you in the studio today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, Tim, give me an overview, and we'll get into the weeds a little bit later, about what's happening. What's this big vision?
We really want the San Antonio Zoo to be considered the top zoo in the country, one of the top zoos in the country. And so we've been working the last couple of years to develop a master plan to really expand our footprint and bring more naturalistic, larger habitats for the animals in our care, and bring back some of the charismatic animals that we don't have or San Antonio hasn't had for a long time.
Like which ones?
Like, you know, the San Antonio Zoo used to have gorillas.
Yeah, the big apes.
Yes, in a small space that knowing what we know now would never do again. So going forward, designing giant spaces for the species that are appropriate, and giving guests up-close experiences where they can really connect to those animals.
So the zoo began in 1914 when George Brackenridge, he had a bunch of animals. It was his property. He just sort of said, hey, everybody, come look at my animals. Is that how it started?
Yeah, he gave that land to the city. He used to have bison and all sorts of animals on display at the park. And then when the quarry became available, the zoo moved into the address that everyone knows it now at on St. Mary Street.
That quarry creates a very interesting space for the zoo.
It's beautiful. It's unique. We're the only zoo in the country that has that. It's also challenging because we're in a quarry, so we have to work around some walls, some big elevation changes. We have 20, 30-foot walls in the zoo, so as we develop the zoo out, we have to take in all that into consideration. But it's very unique. Our zoo has a charm and a feel to it between the rock quarry walls, the river running through it, and the beautiful trees that you don't see at other zoos around the country.
So what are the biggest challenges? Julie Gross, you're the Vice President of Development for the San Antonio Zoo. The zoo is not owned by the city of San Antonio. A lot of people don't understand the relationship that the zoo has with the city. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I think education is always a challenge for nonprofits. The zoo is, in fact, a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and it's educating the public that we're not a city-run zoo. We certainly sit on city property and lease that land that we're on, but from a financial perspective, we really rely on the community to support the work that we're doing. Certainly, as we roll out this, you know, 20-year plan going out, it's going to really rely on philanthropic support for the San Antonio Zoo.
And admissions. I mean, I really have to say, why is the zoo, people may don't realize that our zoo is a real bargain compared to other zoos around the country. You go to any other zoo of our size and nature, and you can expect to pay $50 to get in. In San Antonio, you get the full zoo experience for less than $20. Is that changing? What's going on with the zoo pricing?
That's changing a little. We've added events and other things that adds a little bit to the pricing of the zoo when you visit, and we're working on a strategy to get our ticket pricing to where we think it should be to be able to maintain and grow the zoo like we want and need to do. But at the same time, we want to stay affordable for the community. So what we do now is offer locals days, we call them. So at least seven times a year, usually it's 12, 20 plus days, we offer a locals days where locals can come from or $7 or $8. So we really want to stay. Part of our mission is to expose as many people as we can to our mission and the animals in our care and the conservation work we do. So always having that affordable option for the community is something we'll always keep in mind, regardless of what our regular ticket price goes to.
Parking, I know they're changing the way the zoo, the San Antonio Brackenridge Park is set up. So the parking situation is changing.
Yeah, parking is the biggest challenge for Brackenridge, and one of the things I started working on my first day at the zoo. The Witte has just gone through a massive expansion. The Duseum has moved in. Kitty Park has been refreshed. The Japanese tea gardens have been refreshed. The zoo does 1.2 million visitors a year, And our main parking lot has about 500 parking spaces in it. So parking is the biggest challenge. On the last city bond, we had a 600-car garage approved. So that will go. That will start construction in the next couple months and open in summer of 2019. So we'll have 600 additional free parking spaces, basically doubling our parking on our side of the park for people to be able to access the park, access the zoo, and the other amazing facilities down there.
So is the parking garage going to be closer to Alamo Stadium?
Across the street from the Convocation Center of Alamo Stadium parking lot. So it'll be on the zoo's side of Toledo, which is the street between us and the stadium, right up next to 281. So the northwest side of Toledo.
Right next to the Will Smith Zoo School.
All right. So talk more about that zoo school. That used to be Sunshine Academy, where for a school for hearing impaired children. They moved. They're right now across from Hildebrand. They have a brand new, beautiful campus. But I guess that's about like 8 years old now. But the what's happening now?
Yeah, several years ago, the zoo had the opportunity to actually purchase the school. And so I mentioned earlier that we lease the land that we sit on for the zoo, but we actually own the land that Will Smith Zoo School sits on. So we own that portion. And so it is the largest nature-based preschool in the country. So the zoo has had a preschool for almost 15 years now, but it was housed in the education department on zoo property. And so we had this unique opportunity to purchase the school. Of course, it was located very close, and so it made it ideal. And so we were able to expand the school. So right now we have 8 classrooms of 16 students, ages 3, 4, and 5. And next fall, we will open up our 10 classrooms and be at maximum capacity. So this is a nature-based preschool. The students spend about 70% of their time outside. We have beautiful natural playscapes all around campus, and the students come into the zoo every day.
So what's the student body size?
Right now, we've got 8 classrooms of 16 students each.
Okay, so you're going to make me do math on the radio.
Well, you don't need to do math. When we're fully enrolled next fall, we wanted to grow gradually so we do it right. So when we're fully enrolled, of course, preschool has different options. You can do a 3-day option, you can do a 2-day option, or you can do all 5 days. So we'll be able to teach about 220 students when we're fully enrolled.
So how do we know that this is going to be a school that's available to everyone in San Antonio? Are you going to have what zip codes do you typically represent at that school?
Right. One thing that we're really proud of is we actually have about 49 zip codes represented in Zoo School, and our kind of racial profile mirrors the city pretty closely. But one thing we do want to reach is obviously most preschools, you pay to go to the preschool. And one of the things, again, you know, Tim mentioned about us having local days to really help the community come to the zoo and not have finances be an issue keeping you away. Same thing for Will Smith Zoo School. We are working on creating an endowment where we can provide financial assistance to families. And so, in fact, right now we're working on getting the word out as we move into our new year, because we do have some financial assistance dollars available. So we're really excited to be able to open it up to really anyone that wants to come. But it's popular. People want to come to Will Smith Zoo School.
Yeah, I would bet. But talk about how having a school, preschool for a zoo, how does that fit with the overall mission of a zoo? I mean, I thought a zoo is a place where you put animals for people to gawk at. Why have a preschool?
Well, really, the zoo of today is focused on conservation and education, and our zoo is no exception. And I mean, there's no better way to display that than the largest investment in our zoo's history has been a school. So the purchase and construction of Will Smith Zoo School was the biggest thing that our zoo has ever done. And to be able to bring 220 children a year, it's 3, 4, and 5-year-olds, at the time they're learning the most in their life, and teach them about nature and why nature is important and those things. We're creating the next generation of conservationists and ambassadors for the wild and nature and these species on our planet. So that is one of the most important things the zoo does, is education. People come there initially because it's fun, and we want them to come have fun. While they're there, we take that opportunity to educate them on the animals in our care, those animals' situations in the wild, and the conservation programs that we're doing to help save that.
Got an email from Garrett. What has been done to address problems from previous years, including inadequate water animal enclosures and environmental concerns of dumping contaminated water? I know there was an issue of like some exotic animal feces getting into the San Antonio River. How does that work out?
Sure, I'll talk first about the habitats. We've updated in the last 3.5 years well over 100 of the habitats. So some of the big ones we've done is we expanded the elephant habitat. We have 3 elephants in there we call the Golden Girls, and they get along great, and they're doing very well. We expanded the savannah. We brought giraffes back to San Antonio Zoo. That's a new mixed species space that has zebras and giraffes and hoofstalking birds all together, like you would see on an African savannah. We expanded and improved the lion habitat, brought the glass windows where guests can get nose-to-nose with lions, and expanded that habitat by 25%. We're currently, our rhino exhibit is under construction, where that used to be a habitat divided in half, will be one habitat for rhinos and connect into the giraffe yard, so many of the species will be able to move back and forth. So we've been working zoo-wide on habitat improvements and experience improvements. For the water situation that was brought up years ago before my arrival, it was... we are the headwater of the San Antonio, really. We pump Edwards Aquifer water into the zoo. It runs through our river system and then out to the park. What that allows us to do in the zoo is we have some endangered species living in that water, some crocodiles that couldn't live here or breed without that water that's the same temperature year-round and good water quality. So we've been able to do some things with crocodiles here that no one else in the country can do with breeding. That's helped us. The city came, again, we're city property. The city came probably 4 or 5 years ago, put a UV plant in. So between the zoo and the river is a UV plant that, so all
what's
the water
UV?
That flows, it's a way to clean system.
Okay. It's like
clean
a filtration water.
Yes,
water.
With UV light. So it cleans the water with the UV light. So that sits between us and the park. What we've seen since then is there's still issues in the river. We have a big migratory bird population of egrets that lives on the river. And there's some areas of the river you can't, or the park you can't enjoy during the summer because there's so many of these species of birds. And of course, they're defecating in the water and other things. So part of what we're doing as a conservation department, or our conservation department is working on, is there used to be freshwater beds of clams in the river that filter the river and clean them. And so we're looking to try to be able to reintroduce that species back. Some other species that are invasive need to be removed. These species need a host fish that's native to Texas that's not in the river anymore in order to thrive and populate, and that's not there. So those are things we look at in our own backyard. We work a lot with the Edwards Aquifer. We have probably one of the largest subterranean labs on the planet at the zoo, and we have endangered species there, blind salamanders, Mexican blind catfish, and we're trying to break the code how to breed those species. No one has broken those codes, and so if something ever happened to Edwards Aquifer, we could have a colony that could be reintroduced when the time came, or we give that playbook to someone else that can breed those species. So we work at Edwards Aquifer, and the San Antonio River is something we're very interested in working on beyond our gates to really clean that river back to its natural state.
Yeah, a lot of people don't see the connection between San Antonio River and the San Antonio and River and the zoo.
Right.
And that they're closely connected.
Yes, it really starts at the zoo. I mean, the Edwards Aquifer water is coming from, if it's not coming from the Blue Hole, which the Blue Hole really doesn't run, it's probably running now because it's been raining for 6 weeks. But when the Blue Hole is not running, we are the source of the Edwards Aquifer water to the Riverwalk. So that's what that water is that's coming into the river.
And you take that connection to heart in where you see where you should be putting your efforts.
Right. Yep. So we've been working in the zoo on water use reduction, water quality issues, water, any kind of water challenges that our city faces. We're doing the same thing at the zoo and trying to be the model. Edwards Aquifer gave us an award, an AquaSmarty award, a couple years ago for our conservation work with water. And we work closely with SAWS and Edwards and hopefully soon with the River Authority to really help on the river cleanup of things that are happening upriver or downriver from us. It goes all the way to the Gulf. So we want to really start that effort here, right here at our front gate.
All right. We're talking about the San Antonio Zoo. It's a zoological society, a nonprofit organization committed to securing the future of wildlife through its passion and expertise in animal care, conservation, and education. We have an opportunity to ask the CEO questions. Tim Murrow is with us. You can call in. The number is 210-614-8980. He has a vision of expansion for the San Antonio Zoo, what that's going to look like. What are your favorite memories of the San Antonio Zoo or any other zoo? What would you like to see happen at the San Antonio Zoo? Give us a call. The number again is 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions at TPR at the source at TPR.org. We're going to be right back. Stay tuned.
Mexican Americans often find themselves embracing a cross-cultural lifestyle. For artists trying to relay their work to both worlds, it can provoke a sense of uncertainty.
So then I went back to that insecurity again, right? That the people who say I'm not Mexican enough are right.
Next time on Fronteras, a conversation with Reina Grande, author of A Dream Called Home. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The San Antonio Zoo has a bold plan. You may think of the zoo as a tame place, but actually they're pretty bold when it comes to expansion. They've got looking to go beyond these quarry walls. Any questions that you have about the zoo and where they're going with all this, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Charles is on the air. Charles, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
All right. Well, thank you for taking my call. Tim and Julie, thank you for talking today. I'm really interesting first part of the discussion. I was just curious, as a longtime citizen here, and my family and I are looking forward to enjoying the zoo for years to come, what I don't fully understand is how the city funds the operations of the zoo, and was hoping you could share a little bit about that.
Okay, and does that want to go to Tim Morrow? He's the CEO of the zoo, and Julie Gross is the vice president of development for the zoo. Which one? Let's go to Tim.
That's a great question. We are asked that a lot. We are a private nonprofit that sit on city lease. Our society was very strong in the early days of the zoo, as you can imagine. So we really broke off from the city and became independent in the 30s and 40s. And so when the cities, in general, cities used to run zoos. It usually fell under the parks director, which is why a lot of parks in big cities sit on the park. Some of our sister zoos in Texas, Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston, get a lot more funding.
They get multiple millions of dollars a year from the city coffers.
Right. So, for example, Houston and Fort Worth get about $10 million a year from the city funding. Dallas gets about $14 million a year. We get $306,000 out of hot tax that we use to market the zoo.
So when you say hot tax, that's a hotel motel tax.
Right.
So that's not money coming from streets and sidewalks.
Right.
That's coming from tourists who come to San Antonio. So they're funding the zoo.
Right. Yeah. We did an economic impact study last year that showed our visitors generated about $14.5 million worth of hotel stays. So that generated about $1.4 million of hotel tax for the city of San Antonio. And by state mandate, that tax has to be used for promoting tourism and things like that. So our city gives us $306,000 a year that we use to promote the zoo in and outside of San Antonio to get people to come visit. So we don't have the same model as those zoos of all this big city funding. And we know San Antonio doesn't have the big tax base that some of these bigger cities have and the big corporations and things like that. So we like to say we work smarter and harder. We do all of our own food service and catering and merchandising and everything you can imagine is done in-house. We just can't afford to contract that out and have less of a revenue share. So we do work a lot harder, a lot smarter than most zoos, we like to say. So we find unique ways to do things, which really accentuates the point why we really need donors and the community to step up to help us, because we're not getting the funding that these other big zoos in Texas are getting. The city finds other ways to help us. A perfect example of that is the parking garage that we just got on the bond that the city, you know, put in that package for $12 million to really get us parking, which was sorely needed. So the city's trying to find other ways to help us in manners that are not the same and not taking away from public needs of the city of San Antonio from tax dollars.
So I had a caller, but she dropped off. It was Bree, and she was going to ask about making sure there's adequate space for the animals in their enclosures.
Sure. Yeah, that's what we work on all the time, is habitat improvements. And if you haven't been to the zoo in the last couple of years, you can come see the expansions that we've done. And we're really taking the opportunity to use, we have a lot of historic walls, historic exhibits and habitats that are outdated now.
I remember when I was a kid, I would go to the zoo and they would have things like a panther stuck in like iron bars that was maybe like 8 feet by 8 feet. And you just see the animal walking back and forth. And, you know, it was not a good place for an animal like that. And that doesn't happen anymore.
Right. I think the more you know, the better you do. And zoos started 100 and something years ago as really menagerie collections of the rich in Europe and places like that. They morphed into zoos, and people were judging zoos by how many animals you have, how many animals can I come see at your zoo? Because they didn't have the internet, they didn't have YouTube, they had to come to the zoo to see those unique animals. So zoos put as many animals in their spaces as they could. And we didn't know a lot about their natural habitat and their natural needs. As we've learned, we've gotten better. And what we're learning now is really helping us save those species in the wild, because we understand them better by caring for them properly in the proper habitats and how we can help them in the wild. So that's what's happening at zoos now, where you used to be judged by how many animals you have. Now you're really judged by how much conservation work are you doing, how much education are you doing, and who has the most amazing habitats. And so that's, you know, I go to a zoo meeting annually, and everyone shows the what's new exhibits that are coming, and it's amazing what zoos are doing now to create natural habitats for the animals.
Because we have waterfalls, right, and greenery and, right, and rocky sort of different levels, right, for the cats that can...
Right. The cats are a good example. We expanded the lions 2 years ago. Our next project in line is a jaguar overhead walk. So our jaguar current space will have an overhead walkway, which is a natural experience for a cat to be up in the trees, especially jaguars, as an ambush hunter. And then it'll go through into another aviary, an Amazonian aviary, down to the river ledge. So the cats will be able to sit by the river. Another natural behavior of the cats to sit down by rivers and hunt on rivers. And then hook up into another exhibit. So they'll go from the one space they have now to two spaces and a giant walkway in between that they'll be able to move through an aviary, which no one else in the country has ever done before. So we're really excited about the unique use of those spaces to expand their habitat and their natural behaviors.
Got an email from Jim. Adding a parking lot for 600 cars just upslope of the San Antonio River will create quite a bit of new rainfall runoff with a compromised quality. What can we done to mitigate this? A permeable pavement or lid features? And I think Charlie also has a similar question. Charlie, you're on The Source. Go right ahead.
How you doing? My name is Charlie Price. Thanks for taking my call. I heard, and maybe from an unreliable source, that all the runoff from the zoo, not sewage, but all the runoff from cleaning cages, et cetera, goes into the San Antonio River. It seems like that would be a big cause of pollution, perhaps worse than the egrets. Is that true? And what can be done about that?
All right, Charlie, thank you for your call. So let's go back to Tim Morrow, CEO of the San Antonio Zoo.
Sure, yes. Good question. Any of the water that's flowing from the zoo to the river is going through that UV plant, and that's the water that's pumped in by the zoo, flows through the river system, and then the UV plant into the river. When keepers are cleaning or we're cleaning pathways and those kind of things, we have to follow city code like everyone, so they go into sewer drains and not the river. So that's where that water is going that we're cleaning with and things like that. So the main water challenge for that part of the park of water going into the river is, like the email we had spoke about, is water coming down Tulita. There's no drainage on Tulita. We get all the water spill over from Trinity University, from the Independence, the stadium area, and from Hildebrand, comes down Stadium Drive and literally flows down Tulita. It becomes a river over the curbs all the way down, and that water's flowing straight into the river. So with our garage, the city has a code that we have to follow for runoff. So we have a square footage of the garage roof. We have to do calculations on the runoff. We have engineers that work on this. And then so we'll either have water retention basin or the big water retention holders that would use. And then we would use that for irrigation. So
there are people who are working on this, dedicated to this,
right,
and it's being monitored.
Yeah, you know, part of our mission is really taking care of the environment. So that's, all of these projects are very important to us. And Will Smith Zoo School is a good example of that. It was a 1940 school that we took and gutted and renovated, and it's about to be certified LEED Platinum, which is the highest level of certification for environmentally friendly construction. There's two preschools on the planet that have that distinction, us and one in Greece. So that's very important to what we're doing. Tiny Tots was built to LEED Gold. And so every project we do, we look at improving drainage, conservation, assisting the environment with things like solar, water retention, things like that. The current rhino exhibit that we're doing right now, we're putting in drainage improvements right now. So it's not just flowing on a concrete culvert. We're putting in drainage improvements with the Bexar County funded $200,000 in their last budget for us to be able to do those things. So that's very important in everything we do.
Another caller, and this is Terry. And Terry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I've been to the zoo recently, and I grew up going to the zoo, and I love it, and I'm really glad we have such a great zoo. But I'm a little bit concerned about what's going on there with, I don't know what kind of an event it was, but I was at the area and got an access into the zoo where they had extremely loud noise from music for some event that you were promoting, nighttime or something. And, you know, I was in front of a cat cage. I think it might have been the jaguar cage. And I was having a hard time with the loudness of the noise of this special hotshot event you guys had. And I'm kind of concerned about why you allow something like that to happen. I know you're trying to promote it and gain money to support it, but to me, that's a terrible way to do it. when animals have much more sensitive hearing than we do.
All right, Terry, thank you for your call, Terry. And so who wants to handle the question? Okay, Tim Gross.
Yeah, I think she's speaking. We do Jungle Boogie Nights in the summer. We're open till 9 p.m., so still sunlight out, but a little bit cooler in the evening. You know, goes from 105 to 95, and we have a small band stage set up at our Bistro Plaza, which is from the cats, probably a couple hundred yards away. But what we do whenever we have events at the zoo and there's noise, our animal care staff is there monitoring. Our IT staff is out, actually has sound meters at the zoo and monitors the sound levels of the music or whatever we have going on at the zoo that time. The animal care staff is watching the animals. They know them better than anyone. Any signs of stress that's reported, we address it, which we haven't had. But the IT guys are out there monitoring the levels. You know, zoos across the country, we just came from our AZA meetings in Seattle. The Seattle Zoo has a one-acre concert venue where they're doing, full-blown concerts. And most zoos around the country have those big areas for concerts. We have little bands on a 10-by-12 stage in front of our bistro restaurant, but not uncommon. And all those zoos monitor the health and care of the animals is the priority no matter what at a zoo. So that's all monitored by people that know what they're doing, with specialists for sound and specialists for animal care.
We're talking about the San Antonio Zoo, part of the offerings that the city has for locals and for tourists. It brings in how many visitors y'all get a year?
Around 1.2 million. We're the second largest visited zoo in Texas behind Houston, which they cheat. They don't have any competition like theme parks or Alamos or Riverwalks.
Well, you know, people come to San Antonio and they say, let's add another day to my trip. That gives us more hotel stays and people, and because we have so many things, and the zoo is one of those items that people come to. People are astonished to see that San Antonio has such a world-class zoo, but it's expanding and it's always growing and adapting to what's happening and the new discoveries. And so what's happening with the zoo? Call in with your questions and comments. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about the San Antonio Zoo. And we're with Tim Morrow. He's the CEO of the San Antonio Zoo, and Julie Gross. She's the Vice President of Development. So, Tim, for a while there, we had this controversy and concern about Lucky the elephant, because the zoo had the single elephant, and elephants are pack animals. They need companionship with other elephants, and people were very concerned that Lucky was all by herself, and what's happened with Lucky?
Sure. We expanded that habitat. Almost immediately when I got to the zoo, we started habitat improvements across the zoo, and elephant was no exception. So we started adding some more grass, more horticulture in there, trying to find ways to expand the yard and then find companions for her. And so we met with Ringling Brothers, who had announced already that they were taking elephants off the road, asked them if we could, you know, talk to them about the possibility of companion animals, because Asian is a lucky elephant, Asian elephant. She's been at San Antonio Zoo since 1962. She's 58 years old. She's already outlived her lifespan by 12 years, so she's doing incredibly well. She's one of the oldest elephants in the country. But Ringling came, their elephant staff, and met with us and met with with Lucky and our staff for about 2 days, and said, you know, we think we have the right companion for Lucky. So once they pulled their elephants off the tour, we went to visit their elephant facility in Orlando, outside of Orlando, and we met Nicole, who was the elephant that they thought would fit well with Lucky. Lucky's been very picky who she's been with her whole life at the zoo, and she's been with multiple elephants, and really she's only liked one or two out of those 40-something years that she was there before we brought the next two. They introduced us to Nicole at the facility. Nicole was buddy-buddy with another elephant named Karen, walking together the whole time, and they saw me looking at her and said, you want to bring them both, don't you? And I said, yes. But we deliberately brought one at a time, because what we didn't want is Karen and Nicole to come in and remain best friends, and Lucky's kind of the odd elephant out, which is kind of what had happened before, is she would just stay away from the other elephants in the yard, which wasn't healthy for her. She would hoard food, got overweight, stay in one section of the yard the whole time. She wasn't interacting. So that was very important for us. We brought Nicole first, and they got along. Within 2 days, they were together in the yard, doing very well together, beyond our wildest imagination of how well they would do together so quickly. And then a couple months later, we brought Karen, and that dynamic has been incredible ever since. We call them the Golden Girls. It's three older female elephants, and we enjoy celebrating International Elephant Day and all kinds of holidays with them, and doing special things for the elephants all the time.
All right, let's go to the caller, Dan. Dan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for doing this topic. I'm very proud of our San Antonio Zoo and that y'all are talking about this. And as a native and child growing up here in the 70s, I remember our zoo was promoted as being the third largest after Bronx and San Diego, I think. And I don't know if that's still true or not. And second part of my question has to do with the giraffes that were killed in Europe somewhere. And did we ask to get them over here to try and save them? And do we kill any animals ourselves for those, quote, scientific reasons?
Right. Thank you for that call, Dan. Giraffes are becoming a large area of concern across the world. We're seeing them dying off in Africa, and and now we have giraffes back at the zoo. What's happening?
Yes, so we brought back giraffes probably 2 years ago now. We have a species we have is reticulated giraffe, and in the wild, there's probably less than 4,500 left, and they're what we call part of a silent extinction that is happening. You know, everyone talks about rhinos and elephants, and giraffes are suffering the same fate. They're losing habitat. They're being, sometimes they're killed for food. Sometimes they're the victims of war. They're in a war zone, and they're being shot as target practice and all kinds of horrible things. So giraffe conservation is a big part of what we do. The zoo that he refers to in Europe, and European zoos have a different association than we do. We have the Association of Zoos and Aquarium, which is mostly America and then some other countries. But in that country, what happened was, or at that zoo, what I believe what happened was, they had a male who's dominant in a herd. So the male breeds the females in that herd. Young males coming up can't compete with that older male for those females. They tried to move that giraffe, I believe, and I'm you know, going off what I've read and heard, to another zoo, couldn't find a place, so it ended up culling the animal. And it's not unusual in Europe for culling to happen at zoos, and that zoo uses it as an opportunity for education, where they cull and dissect. They let people watch the dissection of the animal, so kids and families are watching this happen. It's just a European model that's been going there for 100 years.
Do they bank the DNA of animals? I mean, hoping that in the future that information will be able to use to, you know, save the animals?
Yes. You know, San Diego Zoo Global is probably the best example of that. There's two northern white rhinos left on this planet right now. The last male, Sudan, died earlier this year. They were down to three. He was being guarded 24 hours by three or four rangers with AK-47s to keep him alive on a conservation property where, you know, poachers were still coming onto the property. And San Diego Zoo is going to be one of those places probably that was taking semen and eggs from those species while they had them, seeing that they're going extinct. And we see species right now that are probably not recoverable. So this is just one example that we're hopeful that at some point San Diego Zoo and other zoos can get together and use a southern white rhino as a surrogate mother to bring back northern white rhinos from extinction. So if you can imagine a species that's completely gone off the planet, and zoos who, the accredited zoos put together, are one of the biggest conservation efforts on the planet, those zoos could bring back that species with a surrogate mother of a southern white rhino, which is the species that we have at San Antonio Zoo. So that's hopeful for us. The challenge is, okay, where do they go when we bring them back? I mean, they're losing land and habitat so fast and being poached that it's a quandary for zoos to try to figure out this issue.
Julie Gross, you're the Vice President of Development at the San Antonio Zoo. Can you talk a little bit about how the zoo could be changing its face and more... So when you drive down Hildebrand, you're going towards Broadway, you're going past the zoo, but you may not even realize it. So is there going to be any signage or anything there to let people know what's going on?
Absolutely. And this is kind of the beginning of it, as we're talking about the growth that we are going to have really over the next 20 years. We really do want to focus on kind of renovating some of the spaces we have now. And then again, we have this footprint on the other side of 281 next door to the Will Smith Zoo School that we haven't developed. And so we'll have the opportunity to bring in some of these large, big mixed species exhibits that we've talked about before that are so important, not only for us in the conservation world, but also as our guests come in. Obviously, from some of the calls we've had today, people really care about the animals. And the great news is the zoos and aquariums across America really care about the animals too. So we're really excited to, you know, talk more as we roll plans out. We certainly want to get the community to buy into what we're doing. As a new resident to San Antonio, I have been amazed at the love and the pride that this community has in the San Antonio Zoo. And so we want to continue that and have that reflect in our new plans. And, you know, since Tim has come on board, you're seeing such a big presence, not only on social media, but we've got the billboards on 281. We are always trying to get the word out on the new great things that are happening at the San Antonio Zoo.
Okay, another caller, Lupe. And Lupe, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just wondering if all of the animals have access to private space where they can get away from being, you know, viewed by the public. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, Lupe, thank you for the call. And so, Tim?
That's a great question. One we get, you know, it's interesting that we get complaints that I didn't see this certain animal out, and that is because they have access to their back areas during the day. The elephant barn is open, or the lions have access, and so many of the animals have access to go in and out during the day. Some choose to be inside, some choose to be outside. So we tell guests all the time, we can never guarantee you're going to see every animal here because they have choice. They have the choice to be inside or outside. So yes, that's the case in many of our habitats.
What about having video cameras in those areas?
We've done some. We had our lion cubs born a few years ago. We did a live feed of the lion cubs and things like that. So that's something the zoo is starting to play with. What we really want to do in the future is open up, really turn ourselves inside out so guests can see the animal care that happens behind the scenes as well. So almost the guests will have an exhibit view, and then they'll have the animals will have a private space as they do now, but you'll also be able to see our husbandry and our care for the animals happening, where you'll be able to walk through some sections of the barns and things like that in the future.
Okay, last caller. This is Jeremy. And Jeremy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was curious if there are plans to incorporate some habitats along the zoo train that runs around the park.
All right, the Brackenridge Eagle, that is also a part of the zoo, right?
Yes, the zoo operates the train and the gift shop and the little restaurant at the entrance of the zoo. So our lease, that's an agreement with the city. We have about 10 feet on each side of the track. We don't currently have plans to do anything in the park with animal exhibits, but what we are doing in the master plan is trying to find a way to blend the line a little bit better between the zoo and Brackenridge. So there's not this hard line of there's the fence that separates the zoo and Brackenridge on both sides. We look into one of the most beautiful parks in the country, and that looks into one of the most beautiful zoos in the country, and right now you can't see that. So we'll look at ways to kind of blend that line a little bit better so we'll have better views.
Yeah, and this that park, that space has been occupied by people going back thousands of years.
Tens of thousands, yes.
It's one of the most interesting spaces in Texas and the country and the world that needs to be explored. And so you see that also as part of your mission?
Yes. Yeah, so we work really closely with the Brackenridge Conservancy, who also got some funding on the bond. They're restoring some historic buildings, like the historic boat building. I mean, there's just in the last couple hundred years an incredible history at that park, but people have been living there and traveling through that part of Texas for tens of thousands of years. So that research is important to us. Whenever the zoo does a project, a construction project, we work with HDRC and often bring in people from UTSA, archaeologists that watch the site as we're doing construction.
Yeah, and you get terrific geology as
yes,
well.
Yes, and we have found some incredible things on that property, especially down as you get closer to the river. There's a lot of incredible archaeology.
So tomorrow is a locals' day. Julie, can you tell me about that? What does that mean?
Yeah, that is, like Tim mentioned earlier, we want to have a more economical ticket price for our local San Antonio residents to come to the zoo. So they can come to the San Antonio Zoo for $8 and enjoy all that we have to offer.
So this is a way to make sure that people can go to the zoo, make sure this is inclusive, few barriers as possible to get people. And so real quickly, Tim, just I'm almost out of time, but the zoo has a future. It's not just a collection of animals, but this is a way to share animals with people.
Right. We are a conservation organization. We're an educational organization. We embrace our community, and we love that our community embraces us back, and we're excited about our future.
All right. Tim Morrow is the CEO of the San Antonio Zoo. Julie Gross, Vice President of Development for the San Antonio Zoo. And this is The Source, a zoo in itself, here on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.